You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
The greatest recession, as it's being called in some circles, is damaging more than just the stock market, housing prices, and a number of entire nations' bond ratings. It's also having an impact on human rights around the globe. At least that's what an annual report set to be released today by Amnesty International is claiming. And on today's first underreported segment, we will take a look at the correlation between recession and repression. Larry Cox, the executive director of Amnesty International, joins me now. I'm very pleased to welcome him back to our show. Hello.
Thank you.
Amnesty International has said that an explosive human rights time bomb is underlying the global economic crisis. What links these two things, and do you think that this bomb is set to explode soon?
Well, there has been a global human rights crisis for a long time, but the economic crisis is doing three things. It's making existing human rights problems worse, particularly in the area of economic and social rights, of course, with millions and millions and millions of people being pushed into poverty and being deprived of the most basic human rights to water and food and a decent shelter. It's leading to repression because as people rise up to protest those conditions in a number of countries that are documented in the report, governments respond not by listening, but by locking people up or even killing people. We have numerous examples of that. And finally, it's helping divert attention away from human rights crises that have been going on for a long time, like Darfur or other situations like the Congo that are extremely serious. After 9/11, we got used to hearing that human rights were being trampled on in the name of security. Now it's human rights problems are being ignored in the name of the economy.
Historically, haven't hard economic times led to the rise of repressive regimes? I'm thinking of what happened with the Weimar Republic and the rise of the Nazis.
Well, that's exactly what our fear is. I think that's what we mean by the ticking time bomb. I think if nothing is done to address, the human rights problems that are so real for billions of people, people will begin to long for some kind of authoritarian government that can claim to meet their needs, or they will, as I said, rise up and try to protest and in the process foster repression. So it's imperative that if we're going to seriously deal with the economic crisis, that we couple it with a renewed commitment to human rights.
There's an odd situation in some of the more insular countries like North Korea or Myanmar. They actually are cut off from the world's financial system, but they were able to use that as a way of repressing their people.
Well, in both of those countries, it's interesting because there they have actually used economic deprivation as a political tool. They have deprived, for example, people of food. They have rewarded, certain followers with food aid, and others have been deprived and deliberately allowed to go hungry or even to starve to death. So it's a problem that cuts across political regimes, both closed societies like those, but also so-called open societies, where we have seen that having an open economic system does not lead necessarily to human rights improvements.
What countries do you see as being worse and most in jeopardy?
Well, there's a long list, but one of the worst, of course, is Zimbabwe, where you have virtually every human rights violation you can imagine. The combination of the economy simply collapsing, and in the process of people trying to speak out about the political conditions that have led to that, people being killed, people being tortured, women being raped, just massive. Problems of that kind. And again, the economic conditions being used, people being deprived of aid if they belong to the supporters that were of the candidate who opposed Mugabe.
Amnesty International Secretary General Irene Khan has said this crisis is about shortages of food, jobs, clean water, land and housing. Well, we've seen all of that even before the downturn. If they're amplified by this economic downturn, won't the lack of access to those basic necessities also stand in the way of a global economic recovery?
Well, I think we've seen that where there is the political will, money can be found. You know, one of the striking things is that not too long ago, when the Secretary General you just mentioned, Irene Khan, was in New York at the UN talking about the Millennium Development Goals, which are aimed at trying to alleviate poverty, very little excitement was there. She walked outside and found the news on the ticker about a bank that was failing in on Wall Street. And, of course, there was a tremendous – right away, money could be found to rescue the banks. Money could be found to rescue the financial institutions. So it's not a question of a lack of resources. It's really a question of a lack of political will. And one of the things we're hoping is that particularly in this country now, and it will be possible to create the political will for the U.S. to play a leadership role.
Well, many governments like the United States have put together stimulus programs and bailed out economic institutions and other industries. Do you think that those initiatives are tackling the right problems?
I think they're only a partial solution because they're not aiming at the people who are suffering the most. The idea is, you know, if you get the financial institutions working, then everything will take care of
itself.
It's
a trickle-down theory.
It is a form of trickle-down. And what we've seen is that, and we've seen this now very dramatically, is that when you don't really address the underlying causes of deprivation and economic insecurity, the gains you make in one decade can easily be wiped out. The World Bank is now saying that some 53 million people will be added to poverty. That added to hundreds of millions of people who are already there, and you have a world that's going to lose almost all the gains that were made during the decade of so-called economic advances.
You've been doing these annual reports for a while. 2009 particularly worse than 2008?
It is, for the reasons we've just been discussing. I think for Amnesty, this represents a little bit of a break. Normally, we just focus on civil and political rights and economic political repression. But because of this convergence of the economic crisis with the political crisis, we couldn't make that separation. And this report really addresses both economic and social rights as well as political and civil rights.
Well, do you think that some of the places where the human rights abuses have been particularly awful, like Sudan, the Democratic Republic of the Congo, Myanmar, Sri Lanka, that they're going to receive less attention because world leaders are focusing on their own economies?
Yes, we've already seen that begin to happen. I think that there's no question in our mind to trying to get really the political will to do something meaningful in, for example, Sudan and in Darfur. And you can see it all the time. We've seen around Somalia, for example, another emerging crisis, great attention given to the problem of piracy, you know, but almost no attention given to trying to cut off the arms that are flowing into Somalia that are causing, hundreds of thousands of people to be displaced and many people to be killed.
What does this mean for organizations like yours and charities, independent aid organizations? They're also going to be short on cash, aren't they, at a bad time?
Well, there's no doubt about that. What we're counting on is that people will begin to realize that the key to changing this situation is not simply waiting for the government to do something, but for themselves to begin to speak out, and that they'll support organizations like ours that are trying to mobilize the political will. We're launching a campaign with this report called the Demand Dignity Campaign, which is a global campaign, precisely to mobilize people to try to get governments to focus on the underlying problem of poverty that is so widespread.
My guest is Larry Cox, the executive director of Amnesty International. Just last night, the United Nations Human Rights Council passed a resolution praising the Sri Lankan government for defeating the Tamil Tigers. But the UN's own people in Sri Lanka have reported that at least 7,000 civilians were killed in the first 4 months of this year from the fighting, and that many of those deaths are believed to have been caused by shelling by the Sri Lankan military. So is there a bit of disconnect here?
Well, very much so, and it's classic. And it's not only those who have already died, it's those who are still trapped in the conflict zone and are not getting the humanitarian aid they need. It's really for them, and we're talking about hundreds of thousands of people, a very desperate situation. So to praise the Sri Lankan government at that time, rather than putting pressure on the Sri Lankan government to ensure that aid gets to those civilians who are trapped in this conflict, is a classic example of what we've just been talking about.
It's interesting to note some of the countries, developing nations, that signed the resolution: China, India, Egypt, Cuba. A resolution which described the conflict in Sri Lanka as a domestic matter that doesn't warrant outside interference.
Yeah, well, that's classic talk from governments like China, for example, that have always argued that we should, leave these countries alone and let them carry out the repression. And that's hurt us in Sudan. That China has played a major role in making it difficult to do something about Burma. But we have to also look at ourselves, because we often also are a bit selective where we think there should be intervention and where we think we should just let other governments do what they would like.
You're talking about the United States.
Yes, the United States of America.
Because Rwanda is not the only time we look the other way. But do you think that the Sri Lankan resolution will embolden more countries to use harsher measures to clamp down on dissent and resistance groups? Because they might very well be praised in the UN somewhere down the line.
Yeah, it's a question of whether what the goal now is peace at any price. You know, an end to conflict by simply repressing and shelling and killing. And we've seen how seldom that actually works. If you look at Gaza, for example, in the Middle East, this has been a recurring pattern over the years. We saw it at the end of last year, where the effort to deal with really that crisis by simply bombarding this very little island of people, killing people indiscriminately, certainly has not led to peace.
On the other hand, when I think about Sri Lanka, now that the conflict is over, they probably will see a lot more investment. So the economy probably will be helped. I don't know whether we're going to see democracy. This is always an issue, isn't it, that we assume that with greater economic growth that there'll be an introduction of democratic forms, reforms.
Yes.
Sometimes it happens, sometimes it doesn't.
That's absolutely right. And we've seen where it doesn't happen. I mean, we've seen, for example, Russia open up economically, but especially in recent months, begin to crack down again on any form of opposition.
China.
Including killing. We've seen that happen in China as well. There's no direct correlation between opening up your economic system and opening up your political system.
Export economies like China and Mexico are also seeing skyrocketing unemployment rates. Do either of those countries have social safety nets that could absorb the millions of newly unemployed?
No, and in both of those countries, we're seeing, again, the kind of unrest that we've been talking about. China, for example, is particularly striking because most people think China is a country which must be free of any protests because of the kind of regime it has. Yet people have been protesting. They have been rising up. There's been thousands, actually, of demonstrations throughout China because of what you just said, because there isn't the kind of safety net, especially for migrant workers who have almost no protection in China and yet have been the sort of motor of much of the economic development in China.
Well, those migrant workers are Chinese, but I've been sensing just from reading the newspapers that there's a strong anti-immigrant sentiment all around the world. The UK's Guardian newspaper is reporting that the anti-immigrant Freedom Party in the Netherlands has a shot at winning seats in the European Parliament during the EU elections next week. Well, and the Freedom Party's head has called the Quran the equivalent of Mein Kampf.
Yeah, there's been a rise in, this is again something that is not so surprising when there's an economic recession, a rise in xenophobia, a rise in scapegoating. We, of course, have seen it in our own country, but it's particularly striking in places like Europe, where one would have hoped to see a more enlightened policy that borders are being closed, and not simply closed, but people are actually, being rounded up and sent back into very harsh situations at home.
The Amnesty International report for 2009 also criticizes many of the G20 countries. How did G20 countries score compared to the rest of the world when it comes to human rights?
Very badly. Very badly. I think in almost every category, if you take, for example, torture, the percentage of G20 countries which are carrying out torture is very high, something like 80% or something. On every other criteria that you would use, they do very, very badly. Again, showing that there's no correlation between growing economic power, because many of those countries are becoming stronger and stronger, and respect for human rights.
President Obama has pledged to close Guantanamo. He's also indicated that he would retain parts of the Bush administration's military commissions, but with what he says are added protections for defendants. How would you score President Obama's handling of human rights so far?
Well, it's been it was a very important step and a very welcome and positive step for him in the first few days after he was became president to issue the executive orders on Guantanamo and on torture and on ending the CIA prisons. It raised hopes tremendously that maybe we were going to go down a new road and be able to really assume a leadership position in the world based on respect, not just on fear. The problem is that in recent months, there's no doubt that he has begun to take some very worrying steps. The use of military commissions, the talk about indefinite detention, which would be disastrous and would put us back into the category of governments that we shouldn't be in the category of. Those are very worrying steps, and we're hoping that we can, again, mobilize enough support in this country for people to ensure that Obama's best instincts are the instincts that he follows.
Would you like to see a different approach to the people who are engaged in the torture memos? I'm not sure I know what we could do to them, even if we did punish them. I guess disbarment of lawyers might be something.
Well,
is there anything else that could be done?
Yeah, there is. And it's very important that people are held accountable. It's actually international law that people are held accountable under the treaty on torture that we've signed. Once you know that torture has been committed, you're obligated to investigate and hold accountable those responsible. That doesn't necessarily mean that people have to go to prison.
Part of the problem is there is a redefinition of what is torture.
Well, I think that debate is also very important, and even more important are these hints that actually torture was very effective and really it was the only thing that protected us. We need to get out on the table all the information about this so the American people can learn the truth about what torture has done to us and look at the costs, the tremendous costs that we paid for those practices, not only in terms of our prestige, but in terms of our safety, because there's no doubt that people were recruited on the basis of U.S. torture.
You're releasing this report today on the state of human rights around the world. How would my listeners gain access to it?
Oh, very easy. They can simply go to our website, www.amnestyusa.org, and find out. They can either download it or they can find it easily how they can get a copy.
And I want to thank you so much for being with us today, Larry.
It's really my pleasure. Thank you.